This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2, as well as online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. So glad you could join us this afternoon. So what happens when a soldier is deployed and leaves a family behind for months at a time? On the program today, we'll talk with the wife of an active duty Navy pilot about becoming a military spouse, raising young children while their father serves half a world away. Our guest this afternoon, Allison Buchholz. She is the author of Standing By, The Making of an American Military Family in a Time of War. The title is inspired by the announcement made on board to alert crew that the commanding officer has important information for them. Stand by for a word from the commanding officer. Buchholz says military wives spend their days standing by. In her words, we await critical information on our husbands' schedules, swapping rumors and scraps of data on carrier departures, tanker status, and flights from Bahrain, as if we ourselves are the aviators. Listeners, I welcome your questions and comments for our guest, Allison Buchholz. Join our discussion with a telephone call. If you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, join us with a call to 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Allison Buchholz's writings have appeared in several publications, including the New York Times, the Washington Post, Real Simple, Forbes Global, and online at Salon.com. She and her husband Scott and their two children, Ethan and Esther, make their home in Washington State. Standing By, The Making of an American Military Family in a Time of War is Allison Buchholz's first book. It's published by Tarcher Penguin. You'll find out more about our guest and the book at the website www.standingbybook.com. Again, the phone numbers, if you'd like to join us, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. I look forward to your questions and comments. Allison Buchholz, good to talk with you. How are you?
Oh, great. And thank you so much for having me and for that wonderful introduction.
Oh, you're very welcome. How did you meet your husband?
His sister introduced us. His sister and I had gone to high school together. And we met the summer I turned 30. She kept saying, you've got to meet my brother, you've got to meet my brother. And I hadn't known anyone in the military. No one in my family had ever served, and I didn't have any friends in the military. So he was kind of an exotic creature to me. I had always, if I thought of service members at all, I had thought of them perhaps as well-intentioned robots. I had a lot of stereotypes and assumptions about military service members and military families that were shattered after I married into the military.
Now, what led your husband to volunteer for the military, and when did he sign up?
He received an ROTC scholarship. He went to MIT on an ROTC scholarship as an undergraduate. For him, it was for two reasons, partly to pay for college and partly because he had always wanted to be a part of something bigger than himself, and he figured that military service would be a good fit for him, and he was right. He's really enjoyed his career. He's almost at 19 years at this point in the Navy, and it's been very, very fulfilling for him.
Where is he today?
The squadron returned from their seven-month deployment about a year ago, so our squadron is based in Washington State, very far northwest, actually, a little bit closer to Canada than Seattle.
And so he's home now?
He is home. Unfortunately, he's been tapped for another deployment. Like I said, they returned home last June, so it's been almost a year, but at the end of June, he's going to have to leave again, and he will be away for 14 months this time around, so twice as long as the last deployment.
Well.
And so we're trying to kind of wrap our arms around that, prepare ourselves, prepare the kids, and partly just trying to learn some lessons from this last deployment and try to make the next one a little bit easier on everybody.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Well, you know, we took a really close look at the ups and downs that we experienced as a family during the last deployment. The kids really had it hard. They were 2 and 4 when the deployment began. And although my husband had deployed many times, you know, before we had kids, this was the first deployment we experienced as a family. So, you know, we lived the life that many other American military families have lived for generations. But for us, it was new. So even though, you know, we're certainly not unique among military families, this was a rough situation for us, and we were living it for the first time. So in thinking about the next deployment, you know, for example, we looked at, okay, what were the times that were the best for the kids and for me being left at home? And that was the time with extended family members who were in the Washington, D.C. area. So one of the things that we're doing to prepare for my husband's next deployment is moving. We're moving cross-country. We're going from Washington State back to Washington, D.C., where our extended family is. And we're just going to take advantage of the built-in support network that we have. You know, we really think of parents, grandparents, and the kids' aunts and uncles as our safety net. So we're hoping that will make it easier on the kids for the coming year.
Yeah. Now, as you point out in Standing By, a career in the military has changed as a result of the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. People in the military are away longer than they've been at home, and there is something now called an IA, an individual augmentee.
Exactly. The IA experience is really new for military families. IA, like you said, stands for individual augmentee, and it represents a new way of life for service members and their families, because service members are deployed as individuals, not as part of their squadron or unit. So, and that's actually what my husband has been tapped for the coming year. He's not part of a squadron. He's going as an IA. The issue that many families have with IAs is that they really feel like they're on their own. There's not a military spouse group right on base, for example, that can provide support. No one's really kind of watching over you and keeping you informed and educated about where the squadron is and what they're doing and how your service member is. And that's very much the way that it operates in a squadron unit. You know, because my husband is CO of his squadron, one of my roles as the wife of the CO during the past 3-year tour has been to be the one who's that information broker to help families stay informed, because that's one of the ways that military families can feel secure. If they know that everything's okay and they know that someone's looking out for them, it makes the experience of the deployment much smoother. That hasn't been the case with a lot of IA families, but the situation is evolving and improving as it becomes a much stronger part of what the military is trying to do. So it's something brand new for the military and certainly brand new for us.
Yeah. Would you tell us a little bit about how deployments affect children, long deployments? And maybe you would tell us a little bit about the experience of your son, Ethan.
Sure. Ethan is our older of 2 children. His sister is about 2 years younger than he is. And he was around 3 years old when my husband first started going away. You know, again, this was our first deployment as a family, so he had only known us as an intact family. My husband's previous tour was at the Pentagon, where he was coming home every night and he was home every weekend. So Ethan really was very disoriented by what was going on, why Daddy was away for so long, and why things had changed so dramatically. So as you know, children crave stability, and our life for a while there was very unstable. So as a result, Ethan did what a lot of kids do in that situation. He regressed. There were issues with his potty training. There were issues with his language. You know, he was always the kind of kid who spoke in complete paragraphs. And in just a matter of weeks, he went from that to grunting and pointing to show us what he wanted. He wanted to be carried everywhere. He was very quiet and withdrawn at school. So, you know, and I thought of all of those things as being the opposite of his best self. So, you know, first we tried to kind of strike out what the obvious problems might be. We took him to his pediatrician, and they ruled out any physical symptoms. And so we started looking elsewhere, and, you know, we ended up meeting with a counselor and trying to work through his issues with him. And, you know, gradually over the course of the deployment, he became his old self again, and laughter returned to his life. But we worked very hard to get him to a better place. And, you know, I don't know if you know that adage, a mother is only as happy as her least happy child. you know, his heartache really affected all of us. And, you know, his world became my world. And, it, you know, my focus in life became helping him get through the deployment. Our daughter was a little bit younger at the time, and most of the deployment she really only needed me. But towards the end of the deployment, she started showing the same symptoms. So, you know, what we came to see is that a lot of children go through this. There are more and more studies on how deployments affect military children. And, you know, the way that deployments cause increased aggression in some children, and the effects in school and at home. So those kinds of studies are just beginning to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But we certainly have found from what we read that our experience tracked very closely to some of those results.
Is there enough support for military families in terms of these very issues, caring for children?
Well, we looked very hard to find resources, but we did find them. There are several resources. For example, Military One Source is a website that provides a lot of detailed information on how to help children through deployment. I don't know if you know that Sesame Street has partnered with the Department of Defense and has produced several videos for children of deployed service members. And Military One Source distributes those free of charge. Military One Source also provides counseling services to service members' families in their own towns. The Fleet and Family Services Center on base, each unit has one, but since we're Navy, it's called the Fleet and Family Services Center. They also provide counseling and other sorts of family resources. So I think like anything else, if you look and if you look hard enough, you will find what you need. But, you know, it's not always easy to find. And a lot of times, parents going through these issues with their children the first time may think that the child will just grow out of it, that they'll get used to having their parent gone. You know, I may have waited too long in seeking help for our son, but it showed us the next time what to look for, and it taught me to tackle these issues as quickly as I can.
Yeah. Well, now we've talked quite a bit about children, but there are two adults in this situation as well, husbands and wives. And a senior officer said in a training session early on when you were going through all this, what you're about to go through can make you stronger if you have a good marriage.
Right.
And if you don't, well, it just might break you. So how do you keep a marriage going and strong under these very difficult circumstances?
Well, it may be a cliche to say this, and I will elaborate, but it is all about communication, I think. And I say that because the relationships I've seen that have followed a rockier path during deployment, it's come down to communication for them. And I think the issue is that there are lots of ways to drift apart during a deployment. And one of those ways is not staying in touch with each other on the day-to-day details of a couple's life together. You know, so for example, before each deployment or detachment, which is another several week or month absence that the squadron goes through, I asked my husband, how much do you want to know? Do you want me to tell you when the kids are sick? You know, do you want to know when a tree blows down in the yard? And the reason I ask that is because service members are incredibly busy when they go away, and some don't want to be distracted by what's going on the home front. And I can totally understand that. For us, however, you know, my husband has always said, I want you to tell me everything. And that's so he come home and immediately become part of our family again. He doesn't feel like a stranger in the house. He doesn't feel like a renter. You know, he's up to date on everything that's gone on, and that really helps us reintegrate.
Yeah, because as you point out, at some point in the book, a homecoming can be like reentry from space.
Right.
Yeah. One of the interesting things in reading the book, meeting some of the other wives, and I suspect all of their names or most of their names have been changed.
Right.
But for some women, this is really quite a liberating experience, this being on their own and having to take care of things. And you have to fix the washing machine if it breaks down and so on and so forth. So there's got to be a kind of a wide range of... that's one of the strong points, I think, of the book, is that there are some things that are similar from family to family, and then there are some things that are really different. It affects individuals as individuals.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, and it's funny that you use the word liberating because, you know, we were just talking about that whole reentry period and reintegrating as a family. And I think a lot of military spouses who are at home holding down the fort during deployment come to really enjoy the experience almost. You know, even if they love their husband and they want him back, they feel an incredible sense of independence and competence that maybe they hadn't had a chance to feel, for example, if they married young. And so one of the conflicts that couples face post-deployment is giving up control. You know, the husband may come home and say, okay, that was great that you, you know, took care of the bills and took care of the lawn, but I'm ready to take all that back now.
Yeah.
You know, and we've seen cases where the wife says, you know, no, I kind of like the way things were, and, you know, things were working great for us, and the kids were doing great, and there are all kinds of issues that arise after the service member returns home for that reason. We didn't have that problem. I was happy to turn all the responsibilities back over to my husband. So, you know, I feel very, very fortunate. You know, it was smooth sailing for us on the relationship front. Things were hard in a lot of different ways. But I think we are one of those couples that has become stronger for the experience.
This is The Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Our guest this afternoon is Allison Buchholz. She is the author of Standing By, The Making of an American Military Family in a Time of War. Allison is the wife of an active duty Navy pilot, and they are the parents of two children. Ethan and Esther, they make their home in Washington State, although they've got a big transition ahead of them as they make way for husband, father, Scott's deployment again, redeployment, and as Allison and the children will be moving from Washington State across country to Washington, D.C. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments this afternoon. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. And toll-free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. You say your husband, Scott, is a man who takes the long view of what he does. Would you talk about that?
Sure. When I started questioning and challenging why we do what we do as a military family, I did so because I saw the effect that it was having on our family relationships, especially on our kids. And it was a very emotional time for me. I mean, there were many nights when I cried myself to sleep asking, why me? Why does he have to go away? Why can't we just be a normal family? I just want a husband who comes home at 5 o'clock every night and is home every weekend. I don't want a husband who's devoted to serving the country. You know, and of course, these are the very qualities that I admire most in him and that drew me to him initially and that, you know, make me respect him. You know, both as a man, as a husband, and as a service member. So I was deep in turmoil during this period trying to figure out, you know, how we can reconcile the idea that his best qualities are the ones that force him to be away from us for long periods of time. So he and I started talking about those issues in great depth, and I found his perspective to be very compelling. I mean, he talks about American history and the role that the military has served in the history of the country, and also how you don't join the military to support a particular administration or a particular leader. You join the military because it helps with the overall stability in the country and the transition of powers that happen every 4 years. And my husband has studied the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence quite a bit, you know, as part of his own quest for understanding and for meaning. So we talked about that, and when he explained the long view, as I call it in the book, and how he sees his role in American history, I really came to see that his perspective was meaningful and was right for me, too. And I'm grateful to him because he encouraged my questioning and he encouraged my challenging. The issue that I had, I think, coming into the military and the stereotypes that I had about military spouses came from the fact that military spouses are often seen but not heard. And I think that the stereotypes that people have about military spouses, for example, that maybe they're uneducated, unambitious, don't follow current events. I think that all of those assumptions are shattered when you see them up close and personal.
Yeah. So
I know for me, my time in the military has strengthened my sense of civic responsibility, my sense of American history, and it's only by challenging and questioning out loud that I've come around to all of that, and that's because it's kept me engaged with these important questions, and you know, I've emerged from the process actually a much more educated and loyal American.
That's a very interesting part of this story as well. At one point in this story, as you're trying to settle into your new home in Washington State after living in Washington, D.C., you say you finally understood the slippery and undependable nature of words, and you say that by finding yourself sort of a fish out of water, pardon the cliché, you found yourself becoming not only part of an American military family, but an American.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I think I wrote the book for the person that I used to be, and I say that because I feel that there's an incredible divide in this country between military families and civilian families. And I think that has probably emerged since the abolition of the draft in 1973. And, you know, I'm not for the draft in any way. And as the wife of a CO, I'm thrilled that my husband has people working in the squadron who really want to be there and are committed to being there. But I do feel like there is this gap in perspective. And the two sides don't understand each other. So one of my goals in writing the book, and you know, because I saw my own evolution from outsider to insider, was to be able to act as a translator, really, between these two Americas, and maybe to be a little bit of a goodwill ambassador at the same time, because I understand so deeply the civilian experience and the faulty assumptions that are sometimes made. And I see very closely now what goes on the other side as well. So, you know, I hope to bring some of the lessons from my own evolution to non-military readers who may be able to relate to us, you know, in a sense because all families do go through the same things. Everyone with kids has times when, you know, the kids are sad and you don't know what to do. You don't know whether to let them be sad or you don't know whether to fix it. We were dealing with exactly the same issues. It just had to do with my husband being away fighting a war.
Hmm. What kind of reaction is the book getting from both people who are within the military and from those of us who are civilians?
Well, I've been lucky so far. I mean, maybe because the book has only been out a few days. Everyone who's contacted me has been very positive about it. And what has surprised me is that even the friends that I have, good friends that I had, who I thought I'd been sharing our life with on and near the military base in Washington State, once they read it, they said that they had no idea what was really going on with our family and the intensity of the experience that we had. And I certainly don't think I was trying to hide anything along the way. Mm. I was as open as I could be while it was happening because I felt like I needed to ask for help, and I looked for advice in every corner. So I guess I've been surprised because I felt like I was very transparent, and what I found based on these reactions was that no one really knows what another person's inner life is like, and I guess that maybe that sounds like kind of an obvious point, but I've been surprised to the degree that other people have been surprised.
Yeah. One of the things that you wrote about in the introduction to the book, you share several interesting insights with readers here at, in the opening, and I do believe you can read the introduction online.
That's right.
At www.standingbybook.com. At the close of the introduction, you talk about the overwhelming public silence practiced by the military and their families. You write in the introduction about trying to stop writing, mm-hmm. but then you conclude, writing keeps you honest mm-hmm. and connected. How so?
Well, I tried to do it the other way. I mean, when we first started this deployment, and I was, you know, the wife of the CO, I felt like it was my job to be stoic, and that's what I had seen other CO wives mm-hmm. doing, and I felt like that was my job, and that was what was going to help the other spouses in the squadron get by. If they thought I was doing okay, then maybe that they would be okay too. So, you know, when I talk about trying to stop writing, you know, what it basically gets to is that I tried to stop thinking about these issues. I tried to make everything okay. But just saying okay, as I'm sure you know, doesn't make it so. And what I realized as I began publishing essays about our experience as a military family and other military spouses on our base and on other bases around the country started reading them, they came to me with their own experiences. And I realized that even though there may be this overwhelming silence on the part of military spouses, they are going through some incredible challenges. They're just not talking about them. You know, I hope to be able to reach those spouses as well and reassure them that, in fact, everyone goes through these things. It's hard for everyone, and silence is not the only way forward. And, you know, people have asked me, why have you exposed your family like this? Why are you taking this risk? Why are you telling your children secrets? You know, I don't actually think that I'm telling my children secrets. I tried to maintain their privacy in every way that I could. But I did want to share some of what has gone on with us so that other military spouses would not feel quite as alone.
Yeah. I think that's interesting that people think you may be, you know, giving away your family's privacy in a way, but I don't see it that way, I guess. I don't know. I was so pleased to read when Ethan was having his problems that, you know, here's a little guy who his favorite nut is a cashew because it's shaped like a smile.
Children are magical, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, when I talk about every family going through the same things, I one of the reasons why I did talk about our kids so much and the way that they grew and evolved during this period is that I think that a lot of other parents will be able to relate to it. Again, their crises may be different. They may be much bigger. They may be much smaller. I mean, they certainly would take a different cast than ours. But every family goes through crisis, and you know, this was ours.
Yeah. Maybe you would tell us a little bit about the friendships that you have made over the years with other spouses of military personnel, military wives in particular. I'm thinking about Martina and Millie.
Right.
You want to tell us about these women and the friendships that you've forged?
Sure. You know, and I should say, first of all, that I did come rather late in the game to military spousehood. My husband and I got married when I was 31. And, you know, many military spouses marry and have children much earlier. I've met many military spouses who got married right out of college and have been with their husbands since flight school. you know, the very earliest days, and have been through incredible challenges that I didn't have to experience. So many of them forged their bonds early on, and just as their husbands are now in the 19th or 20th years of their career, these military spouses have maintained friendships with their husbands, you know, colleagues' wives for the same amount of time. I wondered coming into this whether or not they would accept me as one of their own, you know, because I was coming in so late. But, you know, they absolutely did, no questions asked. And, you know, they thought of me as one of them long before I thought of myself as one of them. Mm. And they took me under their wing, and they showed me the ropes. They taught me some really profound lessons about how to be a friend. So, I mean, I couldn't have done it without them. We have a military spouse group in the squadron, and then the spouses of the commanding officers on base have another spouse group. And I depended on both of those groups equally. They both brought different things to the table and taught me strategies and tactics for dealing with this life that I couldn't have come up with on my own. So, you know, I think these friendships will be with me for a lifetime.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Millie, and maybe you tell us the story about how she swooped in and saved you from kind of someone who's being a little snarky.
Well, anyone who's gone to high school knows that, you know, there's always a person who is the information broker, the person who revels in having bad news first and sharing bad news first.
Yep.
And, you know, during the period of a deployment, life is hard enough, so you try really hard to stay positive. And the information broker who always wants to be the bearer of bad news, you know, can be the bad apple in the group. And, you know, there's almost always one bad apple. Not always, but as long as you know how to deal with him or her, you can make it through. So in the book, I talk about a friend of mine who I've named Millie, who saw me being confronted by one of these information brokers, and she was. It takes place during homecoming at the very end of the book and the very end of the 7-month deployment. We're all gathered together in the hangar, and there are balloons and there's sheet cake, and you know the wives look beautiful and the children are charming and everybody's happy. And this information broker walks up to me and says, oh, well, I heard a rumor that they're deploying again. You know, it's probably going to be North Korea because something bad is always happening in North Korea. And, you know, I don't have a good game face, and I'm not good at hiding things. And in times like that, I really just shut down. I'm not one for the pithy response, let's put it that way. So this friend, Millie, who comes from a very different background than I have, but with whom I forged a wonderful friendship, did sweep in and, you know, took control of the situation and sent this information broker over to talk to somebody else and, you know, put her arms around me, and together we welcomed the squadron home. So it's the day-to-day moments like that I remember the most.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, you have the times when the squadron is deploying that are absolutely horrible, and you're saying goodbye for 7 months, and then, you know, you have the absolutely wonderful moments when the squadron is returning home. But that, you know, that's twice a year. The rest of the year you're dealing with these very mundane, everyday experiences, and that's what makes life interesting.
Yeah, I could picture the two of you there, and she makes you smile right away after she's sent off. The information broker with one of her down home Texas kind of
right. Anecdotes,
and she says, "You know, you just don't get into the mud.
Right, you don't wrestle with pigs in the mud. You both get dirty, but the pig likes it."
Yep, that's great. That's going to stick with me for a while, I think.
Well, yeah. I'm glad to be able to share her with a wider audience.
I want to talk a little bit about history and faith, and maybe we can talk first about history. You mentioned your husband turning to history. For a greater understanding and in his search for meaning and just what it is that he and so many others do. You remind us early in the book that one of the country's first military wives was Martha Washington.
Right.
And also you include passages from a handbook published back in 1942 titled The Navy Wife. How has the role changed since the Revolutionary War. And those passages that you've included from The Navy Wife, are they, how do they feel today to you?
Would it be okay with you if I read just a short paragraph from The Navy Wife? I use this in the introduction of my book. You know, it kind of sets the tone. And like many things that were written in the past, you know, they do seem kind of outdated and you want to laugh at them at first or maybe deride them. But there is an element of truth that shines through even today. And this is part of what I was battling with and eventually came to terms with during my own experience as a Navy spouse. So this is from, the whole title is The Navy Wife, What She Ought to Know About the Customs of the Service and the Management of a Navy Household, which is a fabulous title as far as I'm concerned. And it starts, a Navy wife should be proud of the Navy and her connection with it, and never by word or deed should she cast any discredit upon it. Times will be hard and separations will be long, but she should present to the world a cheerful agreeableness rather than a resigned stoicism. The Navy doesn't particularly care for a wife who is too obviously carrying her load. Take life as it comes in your stride, my dear, and you will be loved all the more for it. Mm. So when I first married into the military, true to my English major's soul, I thought I could basically just read up on how to be a military spouse. Because as a lifelong reader, uh-huh. I have always depended on books to teach me.
Sure.
And I figured that this case would be no different. You know, it was very different. I mean, I came across a lot of really fantastic books in the process, like this book, The Navy Wife, and Elizabeth Bacon Custer's memoir, many memoirs by or about Civil War wives. So I really, at the end of all of that, felt like I was part of a continuum. And it made me feel much better about my role as a military spouse because I felt like I was one of them. I was doing a version of what they did. And, you know, in my own small way, it was service to the country. I grew to feel like that was actually not a cliche, and that it reflected my experience in a very true and real way. So learning about the history of the military spouse has been an education in and of itself. And, you know, when people ask me, well, how could you have given up your full-time job? You know, how can you be a stay-at-home mom working with your kid, you know, just being with your kids and not working anymore? I feel like I have been incredibly enriched by what I've learned about military spouses and about American history, and I feel like my experience in the military has been an ongoing civics lesson. So I don't feel in any way impoverished by not working, and I don't feel like I've given up learning either.
Hmm. Has the position of military wives within the military culture changed over time?
Very much so. When my husband and I first talked about getting married, and he actually tried to talk me out of getting married because he felt like I would absolutely hate the role of military spouse and that it was antithetical to who I was and that I would grow to resent him for it. So, you know, he tried to talk me out of it, but he did say, you know, you can always opt out of it. Things are not compulsory the way that they used to be. And I have found that to be true. Whereas in the past, the military spouse really had her own fairly rigid role to follow. These days, military spouses can opt out of that role for any reason that they want, you know, and they don't even have to give a reason. Some wives work, obviously. Some just want to devote themselves to their kids. Some had a bad experience in a military spouse group early on in their husband's career, and you know, it left a bad taste in their mouth, and they just don't want to have anything to do with it. Mm. So I felt like, for me, this 3-year tour was really a drop in the bucket, and that, you know, as a way of staying close to my husband during what was surely a very demanding time for him, you know, participating in the life of the squadron was a really important and essential way to do that. And I have to say, I've gotten much more out of the experience than I ever dreamed of.
Mm. And now let's talk about faith in the quest for understanding and meaning. Faith is very important to you. What role does it play in your lives as a family?
Well, we moved to Washington State from the Washington, D.C. area. And, you know, my family is Jewish, and as Jews in the military, you know, we knew that there might not be a whole lot of resources out there for us. You know, of course, there are Jewish communities throughout the Pacific Northwest and in Washington State also, but we live in a fairly remote part of Washington State, and it's a small town. So we were correct. There were not resources out there for Jews. And, you know, for example, there's no JCC, there's no Jewish day school for kids, there's no Hebrew school for kids, there are no synagogues. So really, we took a long and hard look at the way we wanted to educate our children about our religion and bring tradition into their lives in a way that was meaningful. So my husband and I looked at our own life growing up and kind of picked the Jewish traditions that were most meaningful for us, and we started there. Unfortunately, we did so without the benefit of a greater community at first.
Mm-hmm.
Judaism is really a religion that is centered in the home, and I think that that helped us because we were able to start at that baseline point and do what was comfortable for us and just keep adding to it. So eventually, because we did volunteer to be the Jewish lay leaders for our military base,
mm-hmm.
my husband and I did have access to a larger Jewish community in the area. You know, being the lay leader was kind of like being a reporter almost. It gave you permission to ask people questions and to reach out to people who you may thought, you know, for whatever reason, would want to be part of a community also. So gradually, through word of mouth, our Jewish community in Anacortes, the town we live in, has grown to about 10 or 12 families. It's small, but it's very homey. We've basically turned our house into a community center, which has been kind of a fun experience for the kids and for us. And I really feel like we have built something there and been able to give our kids a bit of the kinds of, you know, upbringing that my husband and I had as Jews. And, you know, the kids have met other Jewish kids, which is nice because in an area that is predominantly Christian, we didn't want our kids to feel isolated because they didn't celebrate Christmas and they didn't celebrate Easter.
Mm.
And we had our own traditions. So meeting other Jewish kids has really helped them feel a lot less alone.
Yeah.
We feel very proud of what we've been able to do.
Was there a moment when you felt, when you realized, you knew we're an American military family, or is it something that you're always becoming?
I have a little saying that military families are made, not born.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like our military family was really forged over the course of the deployment.
Mm.
I feel like it was the deployment that really plugged us in to the experience of American military families throughout the generations. And when people ask me, how do you do it? How do you get through this time? I really do tell them that we actually have it easy compared to military spouses of the past. You know, I think about World War II military spouses who sent their husband off for sometimes 3 or 4 years. And there was no email. There was no video teleconference. Mm. There was no satellite phone. And, you know, I'm not going to say that our life is particularly fun, and I'm not going to say that deployment is easy because there's nothing easy about it. And I do very, very much wish that we had a normal life where my husband came home at 5 o'clock every night. But during the times that I wish for something different, I do try to keep that perspective in mind. And, you know, I also know that my husband and my kids and I are forever. And deployment is temporary, and the challenges that we face as a military family are temporary.
Hmm. There, we have to leave it. We're out of time. Allison, thank you very much for speaking with me this afternoon.
Well, thanks for your time today.
Allison Buchholz is the wife of an active duty Navy pilot. She and her husband, Scott, have two children, Ethan and Esther. He's about to be redeployed. And our guest this afternoon tells their story in Standing By, the Making of an American Military Family in a Time of War. The book is published by Tarcher Penguin, and you'll find more about our guest and the book at www.standingbybook.com.